This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick the Week podcast, episode 356, brought to you by Seagate, GoFlex Satellite Hard Drive, and Audible.
Welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 356, brought to you...
It is 6, I can confirm that.
Brought to you from New York City, in Josh's hotel room.
Well, it's a small room.
It's his pod, it's his hotel pod. My name is
it's not a room!
My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
We are iFanboy.com, and we like comics, and this is the weekend of New York Comic Con. We're here covering it, and so if you're a long-time listener, you know that during Comic Con weekends, you get a slightly abridged version of the Pick of the Week podcast. So if you're a nude listener, this would not be a representative of the show itself.
A nude listener?
If you're a new or nude listener. Okay, we accept all listeners.
It's true. either version of that sentence. If you're a new listener...
This isn't your typical podcast.
That's true. Or if you're a new listener, same thing.
Well,
so
it's helpful to know that we're here in Josh's hotel room and we're nude. So we're all in it together.
We accept
really.
Everyone.
I have a Merkin.
So if you're a new listener, you might want to listen to next week's show,
or
next week's show to get a good sense of what the show's actually like normally.
Although this is pretty close.
Yeah.
This new thing.
So this is a review show. We have, you know, we read the books of the week. We picked the best one. So if you haven't read your books, don't listen to the show because it'll be spoiled to find out someone died. Someone very beloved died this week in the comics. We're going to talk about that later.
Oh, God.
No, really? Stan's okay.
Yes. Oh. In the Wolverine show.
Oh, right.
So Ron had the great honor, and Josh actually witnessed Ron going through the pain of having to pick this pick of the week. He was over at my mom's house where I was staying for the con. We got our books together, and I watched Ron's struggle, and no one's going to believe this, but he struggled about this. It was up to the last moment. And the pick of the week was
Uncanny Avengers number one. And I got to tell you, it was a struggle. Normally, con weeks, of course, they're packed with releases and lots of high profile releases. And this week probably had three of the biggest, most anticipated releases from three of the biggest comic publishers this week. In the industry, between Marvel Comics, DC Comics, and Image Comics. Three books that both Connor and I know were hotly awaiting for. Mm-hmm. And as we talked about when we went to Bergen Street Comics to go pick up our books and do all that fun stuff. Ultimately, I sat down, and at the end of the day, I had to go with my loyalty as a fan to Marvel and give the slight edge on the pick of the week to Uncanny Avengers number one over the runner-up, which was clearly Batman number 13, and we'll get to that in a bit.
The thing is, in my pick of the week was obviously Batman, but you take Batman out of the equation, and Avengers is my pick anyway. So it was a great... I loved it.
Right, yeah. And the thing about Uncanny Avengers, and as I wrote about my review, which you can go read on iFanboy.com, is that, you know, listen, this book is kind of a big deal. This is the first book in the new Marvel Now publishing initiative that Marvel did. And so, like, kind of all eyes are on this book. Additionally, what you had is you had the kind of the new status quo now of merging the Avengers and the X-Men, which I'm going to get to also in a moment. But then, from a creator standpoint, you had Rick Remender, who, after years of, I don't want to say struggling, but working hard in the indie scene and doing independent comics, and then finally getting, if you ask me, the recognition he deserves with a legendary run on Uncanny X-Force, kind of getting the keys to the car.
He's doing the flagship book.
He's doing the flagship book. They didn't turn to Bendis. They didn't turn to Hickman. They didn't turn to to Jason Aaron. They didn't, you know, Brubaker left. Like, all the big names that we've been used to at Marvel, this is kind of Remender's moment to shine. So, you know, a lot of pressure. Additionally, they paired him up with John Cassaday, who, aside from the last issue of Planetary in 09 and a short story in the Rocketeer Adventures, we have not seen any sequentials from in literally like over 5 or 6 years.
Ron and I spent a good half an hour trying to find if he'd done any sequentials going through the internet. He hadn't.
Right, and if you're
I believe you.
It's been a long time.
And if you're a comic book fan, you know that he, you know, he's been doing covers for the past couple of years of varying degrees of quality
to books you probably didn't read.
Yeah, Superman,
a great deal of them.
Superman Groundhog.
Well, that Superman more cover to... was fantastic.
That Superman. Yeah, I mean, I'll give John Cassaday this credit. In his period of doing covers, the Superman, the kid with the black eye, I almost bought the original art for. That's how much I love that cover.
But ironically.
The cover was beautiful.
It looked beautiful.
Yeah. That said, I wouldn't fucking wipe my ass with those Shadowland covers.
You've gotten really harsh.
I've gotten really harsh, yeah.
But
honestly, those Shadowland covers were a real line in the sand. In terms of, you know, like, it was like, wow, is this the John Cassaday that Astonishing X-Men and Planetary that won Eisner Awards and we raved about in the mid-2000s, is this what he does now?
I was more offended about the books themselves.
The books inside weren't that as bad. Except, although I do love that the fucking Shadowland building is just still sitting in Hell's Kitchen. Like, Kingpin lives there now. Like, no one has any...
Which is odd because of the paper wall.
Yeah.
And,
anyway, but so there was a big question is what John Cassaday were we going to get? And so, like, going into it, I had no concerns about Remender. I knew he was going to step up and deliver a story that would be, you know, he's figured it out. He has honed his writing, and he has honed his skills of writing these Marvel characters so well with Uncanny X-Force and Secret Avengers and stuff he's been doing that, you know, like, honestly, going into it, I knew Remender would do well. But Cassaday, to me, was the big kind of the X-Factor. And admittedly, I got to the second page, second panel, and the close-up on Wolverine looking up at the Professor Xavier's face, and I went, oh, thank God.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Cassaday I remember. This is the Cassaday from Astonishing X-Men.
One of the things I noticed about it, looking at it, was immediately you had the feeling of oh, I'm reading Astonishing X-Men again.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like it didn't it wasn't the same kind of writing or anything, but it just transported you to sort of, all right, those comics, which is a very positive experience for me. So I was, you know, it put me in a good place.
Did you read this?
I did. Yeah, I did.
I'm just curious because it's not a reboot, right?
It's the relaunch.
So it builds on what happened before, but I thought, and having read Avengers X-Men, I may be wrong, but I thought it did a good enough job of placing the setting and giving you information you needed to go forward. Is that true or not true?
I didn't have a problem, but what's different about me than a lot of people is I really like jumping back into one of these ongoing stories and not knowing exactly where I was. It reminds me of how I used to read comics when I was a kid, more than anything.
Yeah.
Like, you could pick up a random issue of, you know, in the 200s of Avengers, and you just start reading it, and you're piecing together where things were. I remember the first time I ever read the Dark Phoenix saga, it felt just like that. So that doesn't bother, I like that. And this made me feel like that in a way. So that's one of the things I really like.
I mean, they did a good job. Wolverine delivering the eulogy for Professor Xavier kind of set the tone. We understand what's happened in the X-Men's world. We see Havoc going to visit Cyclops in prison, which you you know, but then that gets followed up with Captain America and Thor approaching him and basically inviting him to join the Avengers.
I actually really liked the inclusion of Havoc and his place in the book.
Oh, yeah. And Havoc has been an underused character for years.
And it made a lot of sense. They do kind of represent the new Xavier and Magneto dichotomy. He's the more Xavier type, and now Cyclops is the more Magneto type. As much as you may dislike it, that seems where they're going with it.
And it's another blonde white dude. So they got it going for them.
Wait, is it team all except for Wolverine all blonde white dudes? It is.
Yeah, it is. But what I thought was interesting was that not only making it accessible, but you got that little touch of Remender that he brings to it. So like when Cap approaches Havoc, he goes, "Hey, come have a cup of coffee with me." You have Thor behind him going, "They also have lattes if you prefer. I do." You know, like you just kind of chuckle. Or in the main action sequence, we see Avalanche, who is a former Brotherhood of Evil Mutants member, kind of return and start tearing up the street. And there's all the people kind of screaming. And one of the text bubbles of people screaming, someone going, not like this, you know. So you had those little moments of like a little bit of humor. And you get a sense of right out of the gate, Captain America, Thor, and Havoc, you know, working together, and you get a sense of, okay, what can we see from this? And then that leads to Scarlet Witch visiting the grave of Xavier and trying to say sorry, and Rogue kind of kicking her out, and you instantly get the conflict that pre-exists between Avengers and X-Men, no matter
what. If Rogue hadn't shown up,
do
you think there's any chance that she would have talked about what was in the closet?
I don't know, because that's on Bendis' shoulders. The Avengers run isn't over yet. I'm still holding out.
I'm just saying... Yeah. Rick has a ball that he could pick up and run.
I know. I plan to speak to him at the con about that.
Okay.
But then ultimately it ends with a big kind of scary, horrific, gross kind of ending, and we see the Red Skull is back, and that he has exhumed the body of Xavier and took out his brain, which is fucking pretty definitive when you say, is Xavier going to come back?
Yeah. Well. There's a brain.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I like that Cassidy went with the sort of. Golden Age style Red Skull, as opposed to the, you know, Brubaker's Red Skull was sort of grotesque,
or the 80s 90s heavy brow Martian Manhunter.
I like when they switch around in that. I think that keeps it fun.
Yep.
But speaking of fun, I think one of Remender's strengths is that there's big action and there's some really gross stuff as you just mentioned, but it's also kind of wacky.
Which is
what he does, and he did that in Uncanny X-Force. Uncanny X-Force is as serious and heartfelt as it is. There's also wacky business in there, and in Secret Avengers Week 2, he had the bite of the Black Ant, and you had some goofy villains, but goofy in a good way.
Goofy in a realistic way. I mean, it injects that. I mean, because that's the thing is that, like, even you think about real life, even in our most, you know, kind of moments of at least for us, I know for us, moments of seriousness or whatever, you can't help but crack a joke or whatever just to cut, you know, to have some brevity with it, you know, and so he brings that to it. The other thing I found really interesting about this was, you know, is that, you know, these comics are supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
And that, you know, if I was 13 and you told me that there's going to be a team of Avengers and X-Men together and they were joining, I'd be all over that. And this book totally had me kind of reliving that and kind of like saying, you know, I'm going to have a fun time with it.
But even as a more mature reader, story-wise, it makes sense why they're going to try this now.
Yeah.
And it comes organically, at least out of that story. People may not have liked, but at least what we have here is an organic outcropping of Avengers vs. X-Men.
I would like to point out that I noticed that I really liked the lettering in this book before I saw who did it. It was Eliopolis, but there were a couple of instances where in the Scarlet Witch Rogue scene where they took the text and they didn't put it in a box or anything.
Yeah.
It's just on the page, and it just looked really nice. I was like, oh, that's nice. Like, there was a couple of other bits like that.
So the question is, are you still going to read this?
Yeah, I'll read it for a bit. Yeah, it was fun. I like the Avengers. I always have, and I just got tired of the Avengers as they were. For a while. So
well, it's interesting. We're going to get to that later on. We can talk about the Avengers book, the regular one.
Right.
But the overwhelming community choice.
Yeah. So I totally. And that's the thing. I totally understand.
He's feeling a you moment.
Yeah. Totally overwhelming. The
are they mad
community.
Though? Because I chose like a Dark Horse book. At least you chose one that on any other week would have also been.
No, they're not.
But the overwhelming community pick from the iFanboy community, as well as Connor's pick, was Batman number 13 by Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo, which is the first issue of the Death of a Family kind of story event, which returns the Joker to Batman. And listen, and I tweeted it this morning on the way into the city, just, you know, I'm not stupid. This was a fucking great comic book. Like, it's a five-star book.
Absolutely. Just, on behalf of the iFanbase, Ron, I just want to say you suck.
Right, yeah, there you go.
And you're predictable, and you're probably getting paid.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And, who's paying you this week? Probably Snyder.
Yeah.
But you didn't do it this week.
I mean, just you're a shill, and we don't trust you.
Right, yeah.
Okay, I've got that out of the way.
Okay, good.
I thought this was creepy in all the ways it had to be creepy in an opening issue of a story like this, where the Joker is going to go after Batman's family. Which is his sidekicks, Alfred, the commissioner. And I thought the opening scene in the police station was damn creepy. The first time you saw him standing in the doorway, kind of a small panel, but far off the distance, where it didn't really hit you over the head. It was just kind of there. You had to figure out what you were looking at.
And he's an unstoppable force.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing to be done.
I thought when he told Jim that he'd been sleeping under Jim's bed while Jim slept there was
creepy. Yeah, totally fucked up.
In the best possible way.
The knowing of the secret stashes for the cigarettes. Yeah. Totally creepy.
And I think this is setting up, you know, the Joker is the scariest, most formidable villain that Batman has, and this is setting up to feel that way.
Yep, agreed. If anything, the why Uncanny Avengers didn't edge this out as being for the pick of the week, at least for me, is one is that I have a predilection towards X-Men and Avengers over Batman. I'm a Marvel kid over a DC kid. That was a piece of it. But then the other piece of it is that this is the first issue. And while it was creepy and had all stuff like that, like, I have great expectations for what's to come.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and while this was great and this is a great start, like, it's just going to get better from here.
I remember in San Diego, when we interviewed Snyder, he showed us the final page shot of Joker in black and white early art, obviously, and it is as creep as messed up as it looked in black and white. The fact that he has turned his old face into a mask and he wears it, it's sort of falling half off, it's stretched in weird places. It's creepy. Now, it's worth talking about, because I know I have my ideas, obviously, this might be answering the question, but this would seem to imply that the Joker knows who Batman is.
Oh, of course.
It certainly would. Yes. But
yeah. No, I think it applies.
I think it's possible that you could say that he's known all along, but that was the joke.
No, for me, I think he's known all along and doesn't care. Because he doesn't care about Bruce Wayne, he cares about Batman.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. That's a great way of looking at it. I would say one of the, you know, for me, my favorite thing about this is I got past the first part and I was like, oh, there's a backup. I'll see if I want to read the backup. And I was two pages. This looks like Chuck. This is Chuck. He's drawing Batman again. So I was pleasantly surprised with that.
Yeah.
This is gorgeous.
I mean, I don't want to set expectations too high, but this is the starting. I mean, if you're adding the Jock backups in,
the backup was creepy and it was.
I think it's setting the tone that this is not your Mr. J Joker. And even, I mean, she says it in the issue, but it's not like that. I mean, he doesn't care about Harley. He doesn't care about anybody. It's a different kind of Joker. It's almost that Grant Morrison
idea
from 8 or 9 years ago that the Joker sort of changed his personality so often.
Yeah.
I think that's always just a justification for doing it over and over again.
And Capullo is always worth mentioning. I think he turned some of the more awful costume designs like the Red Robin one, and it actually works when he draws it. I think he does a great job with all the heavy shadow work. He's as big of a star in this book as Snyder is, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what everyone was hoping for when it was first announced, and the cover is creepy.
Cover is super creepy.
Yeah, way to go with the production there. Yeah.
And they did that across all the Batman books, didn't they?
Yeah. Even the Batgirl one had only one page related to the story.
Well, what are you gonna do? I almost
read it based on that, though.
In little words, it says prologue above the little logo, which people didn't catch because that's what they did.
But Batman was great, and I totally tip my hat to Snyder and Capullo, and they're great. I give it 5 stars. It was like a matter of inches between Pick of the Week.
It really is great that Batman is an event book, but like, and not in the traditional way, in that you look forward to it when it comes out.
In the actual title, too, not, you know.
And I got to give Snyder credit. I mean, if you ask me, like, a lot of this Batman run has been built, not built, I mean, Snyder and Capullo are doing great as a team, but a lot of it, like, the Labyrinth issue, and, like, there's been, like, oh, my God, look at Capullo. A lot of it, the story has been, like, oh, my God, look at Capullo blowing the doors off. This issue, I thought, was all Snyder.
Yeah, no,
it was
just like,
was, yeah, it was that the story and the characterization and all that stuff, like, he's nailing it, so, yeah.
Now, Ron, I would have put you up on my shoulders and carried you around the apartment if you had picked MacGyver Fugitive Gauntlet number one as the pick of the week.
I got to be honest with you. It was close. I mean, it was not close. Well,
below ceilings.
Before we get into it, I think, Connor, I think it's important for us to explain, and also for Josh's benefit as well, to explain the importance of MacGyver in the American zeitgeist, in the American cultural...
Did you watch MacGyver, Josh?
No.
Wow. MacGyver, in the age of action-adventure television shows in the 80s, MacGyver really set the bar really high in terms of both quality of show and something and aspirational. I mean, growing up, I mean, MacGyver is now a verb. You got a MacGyver.
Yeah.
You know, like
he's a good lesson to teach. He doesn't like guns. He he will burn you. Before we get to that, I love that the cover actually took place. Not only took place, but it was actually like a panel from.
Yeah.
MacGyver was me and my brother's favorite show, like for a long time. We bought it was not only on every Saturday, but it was on in syndication, so you'd watch 5 days a week, and then Saturday you'd watch the new episode.
I could totally recreate the opening sequence with the explosion and
you could recreate it.
Well, no, I mean, like,
I could
sketch it out.
You could walk me through it.
I could walk you through it.
Okay.
I have distinct memories of the fire ants episode where we went to the.
I do remember the fire ants episode.
That still creeps me out. Just think about the ants and the just the fact that for you know the whole mystery of his first name until the very end we found out it was and the MIT episode where he had to figure out how to get into that locked room.
Just great.
I mean, you're right, it was aspirational because it wasn't all about violence. He didn't really like violence. He was smart. He used his brains to
there's a lot of gunplay in this issue, though.
Well, but not by him.
I see.
Yeah. So
it wasn't me.
So it was the 80s shows where everyone got shot at, but no one ever got hit.
They couldn't figure out what a gunshot sound effect sounded like. You mean that era?
Yes.
There were always guns. I mean, anyway.
Phoenix Foundation.
Yeah, Phoenix Foundation. Pete. But anyway, so when Image Comics 2 years ago announced that they were going to be bringing MacGyver to comics with the original creator, Lee Zoltoff, F. Lee Zoltoff?
Lee David Zoltoff,
not F. Lee Bailey. Lee David Zoltoff. You know, we were just like ecstatic, and it took a while to get here, and so now the issue finally came out, and the creative team ended up being, so it's written by Lee David Zoltoff and Tony Lee. Yeah. So, you know, you got the original, TV creator.
Plus a comic writer.
Yep. And then Pencils and Inks by Will Sliney. And now here's the thing. This could have been awful.
Yeah.
Do you remember the 24 adaptations of IDW and stuff like that? Now, this isn't Watchmen.
No.
It's not the greatest thing in the world, you know, like it's.
But you know what? It felt.
Yeah.
The dialogue felt really authentically MacGyver.
For MacGyver fans, this is exactly what I'd want out of it.
Can I tell you something? This is great art. It's a great artist for this.
Will Sliney's doing like a kind of like a Sean Murphy, Jeremy Hahn hybrid almost.
Yeah.
And the thing is that there's no establishing who MacGyver is. There's no picking up from the TV series. This could be just an episode.
Yeah.
And that's exactly the way you want to do
it. I see that they have man-sized cages.
Oh, yeah.
We put them in the cage. We have man-sized cages.
I wish the mullet had been a bit more pronounced. The mullet was only slightly mullet.
Well, they've updated it a bit. I mean, MacGyver looks a little younger than Richard Dean Anderson was in the show, and all that sort of stuff.
But how good of a hockey player is this version?
Well, we haven't gotten into the hockey.
Okay,
yeah.
But that was also in the opening. He would skate up. And
I remember that. It's the only thing I know about it.
But I was really taken by the dialogue. It really, I could hear Richard Dean Anderson in my head because they really they're nailed. Plus, you get the secret history of MacGyver in the back as written by Lee David Zoltoff.
Right. Which honestly, from a back matter for a fan, like that's totally the way to go.
Yeah,
yeah, that's awesome.
So if you are about our age or even younger, my brother's favorite show of all time is MacGyver.
Yeah,
And he's a little younger than we are. So
So MacGyver number one. I mean, it's a 5-issue miniseries. Hopefully, they do more. I know Zoltoff has plans to do more about bringing MacGyver to the world. So I couldn't be happier with this issue. So it was great.
Didn't they almost do a MacGyver TV show update in the CW?
Yeah, I think so.
They shot a pilot.
I think there's been.
It was the guy from Gilmore Girls, wasn't it?
MacGyver Year One.
It was Jess.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And it was his son, and it was Richard Dean.
Milo?
No, it was. No, it was Dean. It was Dean.
Dean, yeah.
Dean.
Yeah. Chad Michael Murray.
Was it Chad Michael Murray?
Yeah,
I thought it was Dean.
Isn't Dean Chandler?
No.
Oh,
no.
I don't know. I don't remember.
I just remember Richard Anderson played himself. Like they're doing Beverly Hills Cop now.
Yeah.
Like that?
Smart.
No.
Eddie Murphy's going to play Axel Foley to his son in the Sean Ryan. Sean Ryan's show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Sean Ryan's doing it.
Wait, that's a real thing that's happening?
Yeah, on Fox. Yeah.
When?
It's next season. Let's talk about TV shows.
Yeah. But so before we get to the next book, we want to thank one of our sponsors. We want to thank Seagate for helping us come to New York Comic Con and get all this great New York Comic Con coverage that you can expect over at iFanboy.com. You want to check out the Seagate GoFlex Satellite, which is an awesome external hard drive that not only stores all of your media, all your music and movies and TV shows, but it also has Wi-Fi and can stream them to your devices, whether it's an iPad or an Android tablet or whatnot. It's using their free GoFlex Satellite app that you can download and utilize with the drive as well. They've got great, it's got a nice little hardware. It fits snugly in your pocket or in your bag or whatever you need, and you go to Seagate.com/iFanboy, get 10% off the Seagate GoFlex hard drive. So we want to thank Seagate for our coverage of New York Comic Con.
I enjoy the fact that Fantastic Four 611, there's a giant final issue banner on it, but the story doesn't actually end until FF20.
Yeah, well, it's the final issue of this issue.
I expected more of a definitive ending because it was the final issue, but...
Well, I thought this kind of went back... While we've had all these one-and-dones, this kind of went back to the big story and wrapped up what happened to Doom.
Yeah.
And we get a sense of what happened to Doom and not only layered in a lot of Val and what her machinations were and what we can expect from her. I thought it was good. Segment art was great. This run on Fantastic Four Hickman, I'm sure they're going to omnibus out and it's going to be one to remember.
I still feel like it ended at 600, but this was good. I mean, it wasn't as special as it had been before, but I still really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Wolverine the X-Men 18.
Number 18, wow.
Ugh, Jason Aaron is a bastard.
He's a bastard. In all the best kind of ways.
Josh, he took the most beloved character of the book and killed it.
Well, we see you as of right now.
I haven't gotten to read it yet.
Nope. I know, I'm just saying.
I forgot about that I was going to keep reading it, but I am. So go ahead, say what happened. It's
I'm
fine.
Not going to spoil it for you,
did
but...
Did he kill Dupe?
No. Oh. Closer, though.
All right.
But I mean, that's what Jason Aaron does. He recognizes the value of doing that. It's a Joss Whedon mode. And not that he's ripping off Joss Whedon, but they recognize the value of...
And he rips your heart
occasionally
out.
Ripping your heart out.
He rips your heart out. This issue was great because it picked up, it tied in. Again, I got to give Wolverine and the X-Men the credit for probably getting the award for handling the AVX crossover the best.
Yep.
And this tied into the events with Xavier and Cyclops and Wolverine in a contextual way that made sense. You have the last moment before Xavier dies, him reaching out telepathically to Wolverine going, whatever you do, don't close the school. Don't let them close the school. And so that was emotional. Then you had Kitty dealing with the school while this is all happening and trying to keep the school running and organizing a dance. And then at the same time, you have the continuing story of the Hellfire Club with Kilgore that... that Jason's been doing since the first issue continues and with tragic results as we lose our little broodling. So, yeah, tragic. But
I like the fact that they decided it was so stressful they needed to have a dance.
That was great, yeah.
And so everyone was like, dance.
Yeah.
And then it led to very awkward teenage dancing.
Yeah, which is always fun.
When they're not, usually.
The Avengers 31, I wanted to mention, you mentioned earlier how it was nice to get back to the Avengers without all the stuff, and this was sort of like that. I mean, this is not an AVX crossover, there's no banner, it's just the... Last couple issues of Bendis' run.
Didn't they announce that like a year and a half ago? I feel like he's been ending his run for a long time.
Yeah, it did. And it picks up the cover treatment from when he started with Disassembled with the little punch font.
That's
you
true.
Know, Avengers End Time. You didn't even think this was the issue. You thought this was a miniseries or something. Right? You saw it? Yeah.
It was fun. I mean, it's sort of nice to have an Avengers story that's just an Avengers story and not anything else. Yeah. And, you know, Wonder Man showed up again to say, you know, when I was a dick before, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And then the Red Hulk punches him. It was nice. It sets up a new storyline. I guess his final arc, which is going to take place,
is the Hulk then punching somebody the new like Electro stab.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. Although that joke was used in the movie. Yes,
it was. Yeah.
But they as far as they know, he's a bad guy because he attacked them before. So they see him talking to Cap and they attack him without asking questions.
Right.
So they go and they're going to go into some sort of pocket.
Because that Wonder Man thing, he needed to resolve because that was floating out. Bendis has
balls in the air.
Bendis has himself to a Claremontian corner with the Avengers, and that we got the Closet, we got Wonder Man, we got
there's the Ultron story.
Ultron story. There's a lot of dangling things that I don't feel he's ready to close up. So we'll see how he finishes up. So,
nah, I planned it that way.
Yeah.
I actually impulse bought. Emmy Kami Girls. How the fuck you say that?
Emma Kami Girls.
Featuring Wonder Woman. I got because it was Palmiotti and Gray writing and Amanda Connor on art. And I don't know who this is for. I thought it was for like a all ages kind of thing because it seems like it would be, but there's a lot of violence, a lot of scantily clad Amazons, and some not adult language, but more adult language.
Girls love that shit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was great at looking. I mean, I kind of drew most of it. Some of it was Tony Akins, who apparently just comes in whenever they need Wonder Woman films. But if you like Amanda Connor, it was some good Wonder Woman stuff. Different kind of Wonder Woman.
Yeah. So before we get to our last book that we're going to talk about, and before we wrap up the show, we just want to thank our last sponsor, Audible.com. We want to thank them for sponsoring this episode of iFanboy. And you can go to audiblepodcast.com/iFanboy and sign up for Audible and get a pretty good deal on your first sign up. And you can enjoy the wonderful world of audiobooks, which, Josh, I know you are a fan of.
That's true. I was on a road trip today.
Yeah.
I'm going to recommend a book to you. Keeping with our presidential historical theme. I'm going to recommend that you go with
this. This is your presidential history moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First moment in presidential history.
Yeah. We need music.
I recommend that you read or listen to The Rise of Theodore Roosevelt, written by Edmund Morris, as read by a guy who sounds a lot like J.P. Ehrman. And then he went to 20th Street and was... It didn't matter. It's a great book. I'm now listening to Theodore Rex, which is the sequel about his time in office as president. The Rise of Theodore Roosevelt will take you right up to the time when McKinley dies. I know that's a spoiler.
Damn it, Josh.
I know.
I know what happened 100 years ago, but...
Yeah. Well, sorry.
Well, there you go. You go to Audible.
And apparently, every 20 years in the 1800s, the president gets shot. McKinley should have known it going into it. It was a thing that had happened.
So
Garfield, Lincoln, The Rise of Theodore Roosevelt. He's a fascinating person, and maybe next week we'll check in with some tidbits of historical information about him and his greater context.
What's the URL to get to?
Audiblepodcast.com/iFanboy.
Get 10% off that book. Or any book.
Yeah, or any.
You don't have to read that book.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be a quiz.
I don't know if it's 10%.
I
have some sort of deal when you sign
up. That's right.
10% of CD.
Yeah, you're right.
So I think
we're doing
it
out of script.
I think you have to read it.
We're freeballing.
I'm going to go ahead and assign it. It's mandatory.
There's going to be a quiz. The Phantom Stranger, number one, from Dan DiDio, Brett Anderson, Philip Tan. I thought the art was really interesting because it's mostly Brett Anderson, but Philip Tan's doing embellishes, which is...
Is it credited as embellishes?
Yes. Which you haven't seen in a long time.
Finishing.
Embellishes.
And it ends up looking kind of interesting. I don't love it. I don't hate it, as I normally do. But it's sort of kind of Philip Tan, but also kind of Brett Anderson.
Now, I'm not going to lie. The name Dan DiDio on the cover of a book makes me go, no.
I get that until
All Mac
was fantastic.
Great.
Right.
Yeah. So now I don't say that automatically. This is basically
Phantom
Stranger going through the DCU, dealing with the various other mystical... people in this issue, he runs into Raven and tries.
Now
don't they position the Phantom Stranger as being like one of the?
He's going to be the big deal at Trinity War. It's Phantom Stranger, the Question, and Pandora.
Now he showed up in Animal Man.
They
was
ever
it?
Announced that
Pandora's here.
They haven't announced that.
Did Phantom Stranger showed up?
Phantom
Menace.
You know what that means.
It can only mean one thing.
When the Phantom Stranger shows up, it means invasion.
He showed up in Animal Man, though, didn't he? Is that what happened? Like there was some weird dude, and then he put on the outfit.
The silver.
That was pretty vague. I was like, wait a minute.
He is Judas. And the silver he wears on his neck is the
which
the
is
silver
related,
he got paid.
Which is related to the Walt Simonson hardcover that just came out.
Yes, and the silver he got paid is the necklace he has to atone for each piece of silver he has to atone.
Is
for.
It really related to Walt's Judas coin? Like,
No.
Oh, but that's
I thought you meant something else. No, that's a different story.
No, but that's the Judas. Like,
well, that's
the Judas
not like the biblical.
No, but it's not Phantom Stranger. That's different. It's not. That's a
timing
different.
Wise though. They put
that's
that out.
That's Walt's whole thing. It's not related to this at all.
Okay,
that's specifically about one coin.
All right,
this is
fair enough.
But this is...
Jesus, comics got really biblical just then.
I always love Phantom Stranger. He's still at the big 70s collar and the necklace over the collar.
He's always
good. They haven't redesigned him. He looks awesome. Kind of like MacGyver would dress.
So those
is
are,
it?
No.
Those are the books that came out this week that we thought were notable. Go to iFanboy.com. You can read my Pick of the Week review and you can yell at me for picking Uncanny Avengers over Batman. Or you can say right on. Good
he
job.
Struggled, folks.
Yeah.
I was there.
But go to iFanboy.com/comics. You can see all the books that came out and see what people rated them and made their picks of the week. And you can see that 95% of the people, at least as the time of recording, chose Batman 13 as their pick of the week, which is kind of awesome. And also go to iFanboy.com where you can see all of our coverage of New York Comic Con, which will be wrapped up by the time this comes out on Sunday after the con. But we will, if you missed out on all the news and the announcements and things like that, you can check it all out over at iFanboy.com.
Email contact@ifanboy.com.
Yeah, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. You can call us on our voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. We didn't do any emails voicemails because we're in a very small hotel room and hungry. So
okay,
happens.
Listen, we're better than this. I mean,
like
you know,
355.
You got a taste of sort of what we do.
Again, if you're nude,
yeah, if you're nude,
if you
go
are,
back a week or go ahead a week.
Or
here's the deal, we've been doing this for 6 years.
No, seven.
7 years. There's maybe 10 or 15 shows like this, while there are 340 episodes.
Listen,
that are,
but
are
what I'm saying is. This is better than you're going to get with most people anyway. So, you know, we're just winging it here. And I think, you know, it's raw, it's fun, and it's what you want.
And what would Teddy say about the show?
Bully! Actually, he would say it's delightful.
We want to thank everybody who came and said hi to us at the New York Comic Con.
Also, really, only Alice was allowed to call him Teddy. And after she died, again, spoiler... people, he really didn't like being called Teddy, just as a...
Well, he's dead. He can't do anything to me.
Bully.
Anyway. So we want to thank everybody who stopped by and said hello at our table at the con, and also everybody who came to our party on Friday with Rick Remender and Jerome Pena.
I don't like it when you talk about things...
What if no one...
We had a great time.
What if one of us gets killed?
What if there's a fire in the bar
and
underground?
This won't get published.
Oh, you're right.
Only if you get killed.
Yeah.
If I get killed...
If we die in a fire in the bar, do you still publish the show?
Yeah, probably. I need something to hold on to. Yeah, I need some sort of... Yeah, but tragically.
Because think of...
I mean, the show notes will be really depressing.
Think of the press.
I know. He kept on going.
How would you take advantage of that? Like this is a tribute to my friends and my brothers who have fallen.
Right, our last podcast.
Yeah. And it's this.
Yeah. All right, so we got to get over the con. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Goodbye.